been on wars we fight, griping about the great things on the beat. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, lean it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fighting. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking. Down with life, I'm fighting in a fog of doubt. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You walking on the crack beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program. You're all like Resistance Radio. Well, if you get the impression that there's a kind of an agenda going on here, you're not dreaming. It was just a couple of years ago. I'm pretty well informed, I would think. I had never heard of LGBT. We hadn't heard of LGBTQ. We had heard of lesbians, homosexuals, or now sometimes called gay, bisexual. I hadn't heard of the transgenders. Well, now, of course, special accommodations for the transgendered are absolutely all over the place. Well, now, if you've been following what's going on in your children's school, and you should be, you may have noticed in many jurisdictions, British Columbia, for instance, Ontario, and many other ones, that there's been a tremendous push to promote the LGBTQ agenda, anal sex down into kindergarten. Well, poor little kiddies in kindergarten. I'm not sure they even know what anal is, or at least not by that name. And anal sex. Well, I mean, come on. What is going on? Well, what's going on is a ferocious attempt to poison the minds of little children and to mislead them. That's the really terrible thing. Well, LGBTQ activists talks about transforming schools. We're training school teachers to completely smash heteronormativity. And if that seems to be a kind of a new word, I think it's a made up one. What it means is, students are not to believe that heterosexuality is normal. Anything goes. Ellie Barnes, the founder of Educate and Celebrate, describes her organization as a charity that transforms schools into LGBTQ-friendly places. Now, I don't know if this is her real hair, but this creature is a picture. The picture of her is Ellie Barnes, with a high brush cut. Now, that's it's probably about 2 inches high, and it's flaming orange. The goal is to make sure LGBTQ ideology is an everyday occurrence within the school. But the bottom line, as Barnes puts it, is to train teachers to completely smash heteronormativity. Sarah Hobson, a primary school teacher from Waring, Warrington, is a perfect example. Last year, Hobson told the BBC, that's the British Broadcasting Corporation, she conditioned school children as young as six to accept LGBTQ ideology while they're young and impressionable, so they'll be less likely to accept a Christian view of sexuality later on in life. Now you know, this is outright subversion, especially if their parents are Christian. Quote, the more they can be accepting of diversity at this age, you're not going to face it further on, because the children will be accepting now and will be accepting this diversity around them, Hobson says. One method Hobson employs is requiring her young pupils to write a gay love letter from one male character to another male character. The school has also adopted a non-gender specific uniform. In other words, a bag. Now, I mean, this is madness. Sadly, in many cases, these activists seem more passionate about indoctrinating our children than we are about protecting them and educating them. We must be aware of what our kids are hearing in the classroom and who's training them. Because as Jesus warned, every pupil, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. That's Luke chapter 6, verse 40. And these activists know this very well. I am going to see if I can play this interview with Ellie Barnes. This is Ellie Barnes, I hope. I'm having some connectivity problems tonight, but let's just see if we can get this one to cooperate for us. I think we probably will not, so we will leave Ellie Barnes. Now, on Saturday this past week in my new hometown of Hamilton, there was a Gandhi Festival, named after Mahatma Gandhi. And at this Gandhi Festival, that they invited the Yellow Vests and even referred to them as brothers. This created, as you might well imagine, quite the stir among the Antifa and among the anti-Yellow Vest people, and they thought it was just terrible inviting the Yellow Vests, and they said, or they accused the event organizers of making people feel unsafe. And this is, of course, the snowflake argument. You can't attend, or you cannot be here, or you can't open your mouth, otherwise somebody may not feel safe. Well, you know, here's the logical attack or approach. Okay, so the Yellow Vests attended and were referred to as brothers. And what did they do? Did they beat up the largely East Indian crowd? No. Was there any violence? No. In fact, they behaved. And in fact, I would think many people may have come away with a different idea. You know, they may have read in the fake news Hamilton Spectator that this was a hate group. And what would they see? Well, they would see ordinary Canadians who are united by three beliefs. Number one, they oppose the target of the carbon tax, the job-killing carbon tax. Secondly, they want immigration laws enforced, and the illegals, now over 43,000, pouring across the Quebec border at Roxham Road. They want them stopped and sent back or deported. Okay. And number three, they want Canada to withdraw from the UN Protocol on Refugees and Immigrants, because, among other things, it violates national sovereignty and would be enforcing nonsense. including restrictions on free speech. And that's what this was. This isn't a neo-Nazi grouping. Nothing of the sort. This is simply people wanting to protect Canada. So suddenly, people who've been described in scary terms are not so scary anymore. Trudeau has seldom ever met a refugee he didn't like, or a refugee claimant, and many of these refugee claimants are frauds. However, not quite so keen when it comes to Christians. And it just so happens that our Minister of Immigration is Somali Muslim. You believe it? I mean, can you believe it? Well, you better believe it. Ahmed Hassan. He's a Somali Muslim refugee immigration lawyer and a former head of the Canadian Somali Association. So not exactly a person who is on our side. Anyway, don't forget he's a Muslim. Well, there are a couple of Christians who face very major punishment if they are deported. They're refugee claimants. And this is an interview I did with Hamilton Lilly earlier today. The sound may be a little loud, so I'll try to get this right. And here we go, I think. I hope. This is an interview. I'm talking about...
Me and Paul From are going on a field trip to Brantford, the home of Wayne Gretzky. Okay, so I'm just going to show camera so you can see Paul From. He's driving his baby. So, say hi.
Hello.
Okay, so we have a beef with Justin Trudeau. We're going to call Justin Justina. He wants to deport Christian family from Scarborough back to Nigeria, Africa. So it's last name Ogunpoya. What's going on, Paul? Is Trudeau going crazy? Is he losing his mind?
No, I think he's very clever. And he is he's very anti-Christian. And so he has no sympathy for this family from Nigeria. They were Muslims and they converted to Christianity. And now he wants to deport them. And Trudeau is basically in the pocket of the Muslim Brotherhood. These are very, very radical Muslims. So they have, some of them have a lot to do with terrorism in the Middle East. And Trudeau has been just bowing down before them ever since he got elected. His number two or three assistant is an MP from Mississauga called Omar Al-Jabri, and he's a radical from Saudi Arabia. And earlier, 2 years ago, Trudeau brought in or encouraged what they call M103, that's Motion 103, which was against Islamophobia, and it was introduced by another radical Muslim from Mississauga. She's an MP, what they're looking for is censorship of our speech. If you mention Muslims in a negative way, that's Islamophobia. It's not, of course, but that's what they want. The MP who brought that in was a woman named Ikrit Khalid. She's from Pakistan. So Trudeau is bending over backwards to get the support of the Muslims and the radical Muslim leadership and the money. And to do that, or part of what he's doing, is kicking out this Christian family. Because the Muslims deeply hate anybody who converts from Islam to Christianity. Now, most of the time I'm not very sympathetic to refugees, because I think a lot of them are scamsters. But in this case, because there's a very strong Muslim presence in Nigeria and a very radical presence, the Boko Haram, they've kidnapped hundreds and hundreds of young Christian students, many of them girls.
300.
He has forced them into prostitution, murdered some of them. It's a terrible place for Christians. And Trudeau wants to send this family back. This is wrong.
They're going to be there murdered. They will be murdered in Nigeria as soon as they arrive at the Lagos airport. They will be murdered.
Yeah, that was the interview I gave earlier today to the girl we call Hamilton Lily. I went down to a riding just to the west of me in the small city of Brantford, and was helping out my friend who's running as an independent, Leslie Borey, and he's running for a member of parliament, and he's going to give them a good run for their money. He's a good candidate, and he's taking a very strong stand against the globalist bankers and bad folks like that. So I always like to help out people who are doing things, and that. That's, I think, a lesson to us all. I think a lot of people are to treat the attacks on our country as a spectator sport. It's not. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. And this is a rather shocking poll, and it finds that only 18% of people in Germany feel free to voice their views in public. Remember back before the fall of communism, what we used to call ourselves? You know, we were the free world as opposed to the unfree world behind the Iron Curtain. Well, not saying that they were free behind the Iron Curtain. They weren't. But gradually, the iron grip of communism that they experienced behind the Iron Curtain came west. And many nations, largely because of the Jewish lobby, have become less and less free in terms of speech. And this article is a good example of the way people feel. For years, we've discussed the unrelenting attacks on free speech in Europe, with the expansion of hate speech laws and the general criminalization of speech, including international free speech crimes. Some in the United States would like to follow down that dangerous path, and universities are reinforcing the view of the need to regulate speech. The implications of such anti-speech policies are evident in Germany, where a survey conducted by the Institute für Demoskopie Allensbach and published in the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung found that only 18% of Germans feel free to express their views in public. And these are probably people who don't have very strong views about anything. It is the most vivid example of how Europeans are learning to live without free speech. Undeterred, Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer, the successor to Angela Merkel, is now calling on greater limits on free speech during election periods, a concept that would normally be viewed as counterintuitive inside the new European market model. Notably, over 31% of Germans do not even feel free expressing themselves in private among friends. 31% of Germans don't feel free to express themselves in private. Now, they talk about the repression. Just 17% felt free to express themselves on the internet, and 35% said that freedom of speech is confined to the smallest of private circles. Now, that's in, you know, supposedly free Germany. Even at the height of the Stasi, that those were the East German secret police under communism, citizens were not nearly as controlled in East Germany. It's the irony of our times. It has been otherwise liberal governments that have succeeded with authoritarian regimes failed in getting people to give up their free speech rights, all in the name of fighting intolerance, by codifying intolerance into an ever-expanding range of speech. Over the course of the last 50 years, the French, English, and Germans have waged an open war on free speech by criminalizing speech deemed insulting, harassing, or intimidating, or it makes you feel uncomfortable. We previously discussed the alarming rollback of free speech rights in the West. Here and here and here and here and here and here. And there are encroachments appearing in the United States, particularly on college campuses. Notably, the media celebrated the speech of French President Emmanuel Macron before Congress, where he called on the United States to follow the model of Europe on hate speech. In other words, it becomes very difficult to criticize privileged groups. And let's not for one moment think that this is about hate or hate speech. It's about free speech. They're not trying to stop hate. They're trying to stop criticism of a series of privileged minorities. Let me see. Oh yes, I picked up an interesting item today. Yeah, if I can find it here in the let's see, that was the Burlington Man. Oh yes, Canada, of course, is giving money. We're always giving money to people, aren't we? Giving money to pro-China group, pro-red China. That's kind of the important point. A Chinese-Canadian group that has received more than $130,000 in federal funding published a newspaper advertisement and condemned democracy protesters in Hong Kong and closely mirrored Peking's stance on unrest in that city. In other words, basically a mouthpiece for the communist Chinese government. Critics of the regime say they're appalled that the Canadian taxpayers are backing an organization that would pay to intervene on China's side in the Hong Kong turmoil, likely at the behest of Chinese officials at their embassies or consulates. But it's not the only recent example of federal funding linked to activities that support the communist Chinese, as our two countries remain locked in conflict. Yes, they've kidnapped and jailed two of our citizens in retaliation for our having held Ming Wenzhou at the behest of the American government. And she's currently facing an extradition hearing. The Americans want her for fraud, and of course she's the chief financial officer of Huawei, the big high tech giant, and a very important person. Her father is very influential, and so on. So, Red China has held up purchase of $4 billion in Canadian agricultural products, particularly canola. This is all by way of retaliation. It has also meddled considerably in our politics. And there are a number of elected officials, mostly almost all Chinese, who are very, strongly in favor of Red China. Imagine what taxpayers' money going to support pro-Red Chinese organizations. It boggles the mind. The ad in question was placed by the supposedly non-political Council of Newcomer Organizations, and it appeared weeks before a festival co-organized by China's consulate in Toronto, designed in part to celebrate the 70th anniversary of the founding of the communist regime in China in 1949. Heritage Canada gave a multiculturalism grant of $62,000 to last month's Dragon Festival through the event's other organizer, the Canadian Association of Chinese Performing Arts. Meanwhile, the Chinese government invited the heads of both the Newcomer Council, which was founded by Liberal MP Geng Tan, and the Performing Arts Group to attend this week's anniversary celebrations in Peking. So they're as thick as thieves. Council Executive Chairman Zhu Zhang was quoted as saying he wept as he witnessed the military parade through Tiananmen Square, realizing how much he loved the mother country. Now this is the council, that was chairs, aren't they? Well, it might be a couch. let's see, this is the Canadian, although the Council on Newcomer Organizations, Zhu Zhang, they got tens of thousands of dollars. And when he was over there at the communist celebration of the communist revolution, watching the military parade, he said he wept, realizing how much he loved the mother country. Any thoughts on that? One occurred to me. Go home! Go home! What are you doing here? You love the mother country? You love Red China? I don't agree with you, but you're free to do that. Go home! What are you doing here? And it's often noted dual loyalty or conflict in loyalty. This is often an accusation made against Jews, and of course they bristle at that, saying, say that's an anti-Semitic trope, or let's say a pattern or theme. Well, I don't know about anti-Semitic or pro-Semitic or whatever. All the woman knows is it true? And of course, it is for many, not all, but for many Jews, their prime loyalty is to Israel. No, not to us. In fact, all through history, Jews have not had any great loyalty to the country in which they've taken up residence. In fact, there's both a plan and a theme going back 2,000 years called the Wandering Jew. Goes from country to country seeking out opportunity and moving on. He often does not have the loyalty to the soil, to the land that many Europeans do. Well, the Chinese are sometimes called the Jews of Asia. They've spread out to many, many countries, including Canada, the United States. They're strong in a number of European countries like France and Britain, and throughout Southeast Asia. In fact, in places like Malaysia and Indonesia, they form much of the merchant class, in other words, the Jews of Asia. And many fear, with some justification, that their first loyalty is not to the lands in which they live. But just listen to this Zhu Zhang, who is the chairman of the Council of Newcomer Organizations. He says he was over the military parade celebrating the 70th anniversary of the Communist Revolution in China, just a couple of days ago. And he said he was weeping, realizing how much he loved the motherland. Yeah, well, that's nice. What are you doing here? There are some Chinese who disagree with this way the government was spending the money. our taxpayers' money should never have been used to fund such organizations and activities, said Ivy Lee, a spokeswoman for the group Canadian Friends of Hong Kong. By doing so, our government is using taxpayers' money to enable Chinese Communist Party influence and infiltration into our society and politics. This is a total betrayal of the Canadian voters. It is very troubling, she said, that Ottawa helped pay for an event, the Dragon Festival, that marked a totalitarian state's anniversary, added Chuck Kwan of the Toronto Association for Democracy in China. The consulate, that's in Toronto, the Red Chinese consulate, should be funding the whole thing, and then they can make whatever speech they want. That's right. What's the Canadian taxpayer doing funding it? Many Chinese in Canada are wealthy. Let them fund their community events. Critics say the incidents are just the latest examples of China's long soft power reach into Canadian society, with the added wrinkle of financial support from Ottawa. So the taxpayer is supporting propaganda efforts by a regime that is actively hostile to Canada. Your head spins. Not good news on the freedom front. Here's a cartoon that I saw, and it's kind of priceless. Came to me over Twitter, and it says they're the cartoon children. The child says, "I want to become a transsexual gay prostitute with AIDS before I turn 12." And the compliant parent says, "Oh, okay, dear." And there's another cartoon that was sent my way, which I thought was also captured some of what's going on in our increasingly degenerate society. This is called Progressive Parenting. First frame, Mom, I want to jump off the roof with a cape. Mom says, no. Second frame, Mom, I want to play with matches. Mom says, no. Third frame, Mom, I want to drive the car. The kid's, maybe 8 years old. No. Fourth frame, I want to cut off my genitals. Whatever you say, honey, it's your choice. And that is, it's a cartoon, but it's a real problem. Another thing that was sent my way, and I want to thank people. If you shoot some information my way, I really appreciate it, and I hope I acknowledge it. Hundreds of transgendered youth who have had gender reassignment surgery wish they hadn't and want to transition back, says trans rights champion. And this is a real problem. It's a gender transition regret. A foolish decision. This is the problem with allowing anybody who's not an adult to make these decisions, to have genital surgery, remove a penis or whatever, suppress the growth of breasts or remove them, hormone therapy that changes what's going on in the body. These intrusions in the body have very, very serious consequences. Very, very serious consequences. And often the person who does this regrets it. For many, it's a passing especially girls, it's a passing fantasy. Often influenced by peers. They're in a little group, a little clique. It might be on Facebook, it might be at school, and other kids, one girl in the clique gets the idea she'd like to be a boy and starts wearing boys' clothes, gives herself a boy's name, then wants to go further and goes in for hormone therapy and so on, starts the transitioning. Well, what they have found is that this is a passing fantasy, and that very often within a year they change their mind. They realize they're not really a boy. This is, you know, after the shock value has worn off. They're not getting. At one point it was edgy and that type of thing. Oh, well, it's no longer edgy. They don't want to be a boy. They realize they're a girl. And so, well, if all they did was change their hairstyle and affect a boy's name, that might be one thing. But once you start messing with your body, it's another thing. And what the psychologists and psychiatrists have found is there are a large number of people who regret it, want to go back to being normal. Well, if you have messed with your body, that is not always possible. Now, I would agree that an adult may have the right to. If a man wants to be a woman, wants to chop off his testicles, well, okay. Well, not okay, but that may be a decision that person has the right to make. They do not have the right to make the decision when they're younger than that. Just like a person does not have the right to drive a car when they're 14. We say, you know, if you're going to drive a car, you've got to be an adult. Similarly, the right to vote. You've got to be an adult. And by the same extension, that should apply to life-changing body surgery. Oh yeah, we hear endlessly about, you know, slavery in the United States, right? How terrible it was, and blah 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 blah. Well, who was the first non-Indian? Now the Indians owned other Indians as slaves, but excluding them. Who was the first slave owner in the United States? Guy from Birmingham, England? No. Guy from Madrid, Spain, maybe? No. A black man. That's right. And you know, that's, if we had a more honest talk about slavery and so on, a lot of this would simply, go up in smoke. You might agree that slavery is a bad institution, or we've come to that view, but it's been around through all of human history. But it should not be an exclusive white guilt thing. And here are the facts. According to colonial records, the first slave owner in the United States was a black man. Prior to 1655, there were no legal chattel slaves in the colonies, only indentured servants. All masters were required to free their servants after their time of indenture, usually 7 years, was up. 7 years was the limit that an indentured servant could be held. Upon the release, they were granted 50 acres of land. This included any black African purchased from slave traders. Blacks were also granted 50 acres upon their release. Anthony Johnson was a Negro from modern-day Angola. He was brought to the U.S. to work on a tobacco farm in 1619. In 1622, he was almost killed when Powhatan Indians attacked the farm. 52 of the 57 people on the farm perished in the attack. He married a black female servant while working on the farm. When Anthony was released, he was legally recognized as a free Negro and ran a successful farm. In 1651, he held 250 acres and five black indentured servants. In 1654, it was time for Anthony to release John Cazor, a black indentured servant. Instead, Anthony told Kazar he was extending his time. Kazar left and became employed by the free white man, Robert Parker. Anthony Johnson sued Robert Parker in the Northampton Court in 1654. In 1655, the court ruled that Anthony Johnson could hold John Kazar indefinitely. The court gave judicial sanction for blacks to own members of their own race as chattel slaves. Thus, Kazar became the first permanent slave, and Johnson, who was black, the first permanent slave owner. Kind of a bit of an anticlimax, isn't it? Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I've got to take my musical break right now. And why don't we play this great musician, former star of Hee Haw. He brought the Bakersfield sound to Nashville from Bakersfield, California, Buck Owens and the Buckaroos. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. This is Buck Owens and the Buckaroos.
Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my life once more. Love's gonna lift here again. Things are gonna be the way they were before.
Through this room in my jail cell, I took
$15 from that man. Left him my watch and my old house key. Don't want folks thinking that I'd steal. Thank you.
together again. My tears have stopped falling. The long, lonely nights are now at an end. The key to my heart you hold in your hand. And nothing else matters. We're together again.
And you're gonna have
down the track. But darling, before you go, be sure you know how much I love you, and that I'm sorry for the quarrel that we had. If you leave, you're gonna tear my world to pieces. So take it slow, be sure you know before you go. Oh, your wounded pride is blind, it's your reason. And right now you wanna hurt me if you can. A man is waiting here to take you to the station, and you're leaving with your ticket in your hand. But darling, before you go, be sure you know how much I love you, and that I'm sorry for the quarrel that we had. If you leave, you're gonna tear my world to pieces. So take it slow, be sure you know before you go.
This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, entwine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple.